It's the morning show on the Ideas Network here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Molly Stentz, in for Kate Archer-Kent. We're heading into day four of the Derek Chauvin murder trial. This is the former Minneapolis police officer who forcibly restrained George Floyd outside a convenience store last Memorial Day, kneeling on his neck for nearly 9 minutes as he gasped for breath. Chauvin is accused of second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. How does this case make you feel about criminal justice in America? What would justice look like to you in this case? We're at 1-800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org. India Yancey Bragg is a race and diversity reporter with USA Today. She's covering the trial from Minneapolis. Good morning, India.
Morning.
So prosecutors have been laying out the case. What have been the main takeaways so far?
The takeaways are so far have been most witnesses that they've called so far have been eyewitnesses to the event, with the exception of the first witness and the last witness that we've heard from. And the video that many people have taken, body camera videos, those have been kind of the star witnesses, I think, for the prosecution, showing what happened in the course of the 9 minutes and 29 seconds that Derek Chauvin was on George Floyd's neck.
And so there's three different charges here. What are prosecutors, what are they attempting to prove here?
Yeah, so the prosecutors have to prove that Derek Chauvin's actions were a substantial cause of death or a substantial contributing factor to George Floyd's death. And they have to show beyond a reasonable doubt that Chauvin caused Floyd's death while assaulting him in order to prove second degree unintentional murder. For third degree murder, that's a little bit more challenging. It's more complicated. They have to prove that Chauvin caused the death of George Floyd by perpetrating an act eminently dangerous to others and evincing a depraved mind. And for second-degree manslaughter, prosecutors have to show beyond a reasonable doubt that Chauvin was culpably negligent and took an unreasonable risk with Floyd's life.
And so you mentioned the videos playing the star role throughout the trial so far. We heard from the teenager whose video went viral, who captured the event on their cell phone. What was her testimony like?
It was incredibly emotional, as many of the witnesses have been. She talked about how she's stayed up at night apologizing to George Floyd for not doing more to save his life.
We also heard from firefighters. What did you hear themes throughout the witnesses?
I think that guilt that I was talking about is a big theme that has come up with many of the witnesses. You know, firefighter Genevieve Hansen feels like she could have provided medical aid to Floyd. And she asked, you know, she can be heard in the video asking officers to check his pulse. And she talks about how she should have intervened medically. And we heard from the cashier at the Cup Foods who took the counterfeit $20 bill from Mr. Floyd. And he said something to the effect of, if I had just not said anything to my manager about that bill, you know, Mr. Floyd might still be alive.
Right. So many of these witnesses taking on the responsibility onto their own shoulders.
Exactly.
How's the defense team been so far?
With many of the minor witnesses, there were many people who witnessed the event that were younger than 18 at the time. The defense has had to be kind of careful. You know, Eric Nelson can't be that aggressive with them because, you know, their testimonies are incredibly emotional. But he has gotten combative at times with the firefighter, for example. There was a very heated exchange where Judge Peter Cahill sent the jury out of the room and reprimanded Hansen for not answering the defense's questions. He's also gotten kind of combative with Donald Williams, who was a mixed martial arts fighter who was very vocal. He can be heard on the video, you know, asking Chauvin to get off of George Floyd. And I think that he is trying to characterize the crowd that was there that day as angry and large and threatening to the officers. And people are pretty resistant to characterizing themselves as angry. They will accept that they were upset and that they may have raised their voice, but they say that is in response to what they saw.
Yeah. What's the mood been in like inside the courtroom? What are you feeling? What can you see that we can't see not being there?
So I haven't actually been inside the courtroom yet because the reporters are rotating for a spot there. But I've read pool reports from people who have been actually inside. And one thing that I noted yesterday was that the mood seemed to shift very quickly when the graphic video was being played. Some jurors looked away. Some were watching. You know, there's a Floyd family member in the courtroom almost every day. And I know yesterday it was Rodney Floyd, and he wouldn't watch the video.
Have you been outside in the community, outside the courthouse?
Yeah, I'm typically in the building next door watching. And so I remember on the first day of jury selection, there was quite a large crowd, like right away in the morning. And on the first day of the trial this week, there was a large crowd that gathered in the evening.
And what were they doing?
Oh, to protest and just to make their voices heard and to let there's a lot of, I think, tension and anger in the city and not a lot of expectation that that Chauvin will be convicted. And so people are just letting the world know that they're watching the trial.
What do you think might happen after the trial concludes?
It's hard to say. I can't predict how the trial is going to go, especially because I haven't actually been able to look at the jury myself. But I think that if Chauvin is acquitted, I think there's a high probability that protests could break out again.
Have you talked to the protesters? Are they saying anything particular about how they feel and what they might intend to do?
Yeah, I think people, like I was saying, people are not very hopeful that Chauvin will get convicted, and they're angry, they're upset, and, many people have expressed that it's not just George Floyd, it is the legacy of and the history of policing in this country that is fueling this kind of the tension, I think. People are worried about how this trial is going to go.
Yeah. What do you know about the case the defense is making for Derek Chauvin?
Yeah, so Eric Nelson, who is the lead defense attorney, in his opening statement, he focused a lot on Floyd's existing health issues and his drug use. And he basically has to try to get the jury to forget about the videos. And he said something to the effect of, this case is about more than 9 minutes and 29 seconds, you know, and he is going to focus heavily on what was Mr. Floyd's cause of death and try to prove that it occurred as a result of hypertension or coronary disease and the ingestion of methamphetamine and fentanyl. And he is also, as I was saying before, making the argument that the officers were feeling threatened by the crowd and that, you know, Mr. Floyd outweighs Mr. Chauvin. And so the officers had to control him. And that is sort of the case that he's been making so far.
And how long is this trial expected to last?
I believe it's scheduled for 4 weeks, and then it will go into jury deliberations.
Mm-hmm. Has the $27 million, the settlement to George Floyd's family, the separate case, has that come up so far?
Yeah, it has come up during jury selection because that is when the city announced it. And it became a point of contention because 7 jurors had already been selected at that point. And so Cahill had to call them back in and, you know, ask them how they felt about learning about the settlement and if it would affect their ability to be impartial. And 2 people were dismissed after saying that it did. So Cahill was not particularly happy about that.
Mm-hmm. And how has Cahill been handling the case so far?
I think he's been really trying to keep things moving. There was some concern that it would be delayed with the addition of the 3rd-degree murder charge. And, you know, with the settlement, I think he's really been trying to keep things efficient. And there have been moments where I think his temper has kind of flared up, like as I mentioned with Genevieve Hansen earlier this week. But I think he's been fairly even keeled and, you know, jovial with the jurors and trying to make people feel comfortable. But yeah, trying to keep things moving.
We're speaking with India Yancey Bragg, who is a reporter with USA Today. She's been covering the trial in Minneapolis. You're listening to The Morning Show, and I'm Molly Stentz. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Molly Stentz. We're talking about the Derek Chauvin murder trial happening now in Minneapolis, and we're taking your questions. What would justice look like to you in this case? We're at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us ideas@wpr.org. We're speaking to India Yancey Bragg, reporter for USA Today, who's been in Minneapolis all week covering the trial. Now, India, earlier this week, you published a news report that looked at the trauma that the death of George Floyd caused Black teens in Minneapolis. What did they tell you?
A lot of people told me that when they looked at George Floyd, they saw their brothers, they saw their fathers, they saw their friends, and kids especially are worried about growing up and interacting with police and being viewed as threatening because they are Black. And many of them are worried that this trial is going to be re-traumatizing for them because, I mean, the video was played maybe 7 times yesterday. So for people that are watching, they have to see this really graphic video over and over again.
What did the mental health experts you talked to say about this?
They said that this trial is particularly difficult for the people involved, the witnesses, and that it's going to impact them for the rest of their life. And it's also difficult for teens who are just starting to understand what it means to be Black in America, and they're forming their own racial identities. And, you know, it teaches them at a young age that there are things that they have to worry about that other kids don't. And it can cause, you know, anxiety and depression. It can cause kids to become isolated, and you know, there are not enough mental health resources available for young Black teens in the city, I think.
Yeah. Is there any effort happening in Minneapolis now, any kind of mental health support?
There certainly is. There are, you know, Black mental health professionals that are, you know, opening up spaces in high schools so that kids can talk about how they feel. And there are kids, too, teens that are trying to pull together resources and, you know, create one teen in particular. I'm thinking of, he's trying to create a social media page that has a list of all these resources to just kind of encourage people to take advantage of what's already out there.
Yeah. We're speaking with India Yancey Bragg, reporter for USA Today, who has been covering the trial of Derek Chauvin in Minneapolis. And I wonder, India, as you look, you're there in Minneapolis, you're looking at the media coverage, both locally and nationally, I imagine. Are you noticing trends in how this is being covered? I mean, this story is everywhere, leading newscasts. Have you noticed differences in local press?
Yeah, I mean, the local media coverage has just been outstanding. I feel like I read the Star Tribune like every day. I think local media is really on top of this and covering a lot of the different angles. It feels like the things that I notice and that I'm talking about, they show up immediately, you know, online or in the paper the next day. Particularly what I was mentioning before about the Eric Nelson trying to paint the crowd as angry and the resistance to that from some of the witnesses. I saw a story in the Tribune on that. So local media coverage has been really excellent. And I mean, there's reporters from around the world that are in the media center across the street watching the trial every day. So I think media coverage has been really extensive. And I think that can be hard for residents in the city who, you know, they're getting interviewed multiple times, people at protests, you know, you seeing the similar voices being elevated sometimes.
Yeah, I imagine it must be hard to sequester the jurors and kind of insulate them from the media coverage. Do you know to what degree that's happening?
I don't think that they have been sequestered at this point, but they, you know, Cahill has asked all of them to kind of stay away from social media. And, you know, he has this line, like, you don't have to refuse to speak to anybody, but, you know, they can't talk about being on this jury. And so, you know, if you can't tell people, you know, I'm a juror, please don't talk to me about this. How do you avoid learning about it when it seems like it's so prevalent? So, yeah, I think it's definitely been a challenge. And that's why the settlement was so difficult to avoid having jurors learn about it, because it just, people covered it.
Right, right. So it's not like they're holed up in a hotel room somewhere with, you know, no TV and no internet. They're
exactly.
going about their everyday lives.
Yeah. And I mean, if you go on Facebook, you'll probably see something about it.
Yeah, yeah, it's unavoidable. I mean, how much do you think that settlement is a factor here, is going to weigh into this case?
Well, I don't think that at this point it'll weigh in anymore because, you know, it's a separate legal case, and I don't think that the prosecution is going to bring it up. The defense certainly won't want to bring it up. So I don't think it will play into the actual drama in the courtroom anymore, but it certainly had an impact on trying to find an impartial jury, which was, you know, already a challenge enough.
Mm-hmm. And what do you expect to see at the trial today?
Today we're expecting more witnesses for the prosecution, I believe. I don't have an advanced witness list of who they're going to call, but it seems like they are moving away from eyewitnesses, and the last witness yesterday was a police officer, so they may be getting into the police training aspect today, but I really don't know.
What will you be watching for?
I tend to watch for those kind of emotional moments. So far, it's been incredibly emotional, particularly when the video is played. And so that's what I tend to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, the moments that we're going to remember, we're going to be talking about from years from this moment.
Exactly. And, you know, it's also interesting to see, you know, eventually we're going to get into medical testimony and we're going to get police officers. I believe Police Chief Aaron Bondo is going to be testifying at some point. So I think it's going to get into the more technical aspects of the case at some point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the community members, given that you've said this trial could go on for weeks on end, do you think the community members are going to stay with it? Are they going to maintain a presence from those you've talked to outside the courtroom?
I don't know. I on the first day of jury selection and the first day of the trial, there was a big presence. But day to day, it's a couple people outside because I think that people are at home watching. I think, you know, I was kind of surprised that everyone that I spoke to, you know, they appeared to spend a good amount of time watching jury selection, which, you know, it's not even, you know, the evidence at that point. So I think people are really glued to the screen on this.
Yeah. We're speaking with India Yancey Bragg, a race and diversity reporter with USA Today. She's been covering the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who's been charged with murder and manslaughter in the death of George Floyd. And we want to hear from you. 1-800-642-1234. ideas@WPR.org. What do you think about the trial so far? Are you following it? How is it impacting you? 1-800-642-1234. Now, India, you're on the race and diversity beat with USA Today. What has that entailed so far for you?
The protests over the summer were that's when I transitioned to this beat. So that was kind of my introduction to what I would be covering. I've covered the rise in Asian hate crimes. And so it's been a wide range of issues, certainly.
Yeah. Not a slow beat this year, India.
Unfortunately, no.
No, there's a lot to deal with, a lot going on. How long will you stay in Minneapolis?
I am in and out during the trial. I'm here for the first 2 weeks, and then I'll be back for the final week. And whenever we reach a verdict, I'll be here.
And you mentioned that the police chief, it's expected that the police chief would testify. Do you have any insight or knowledge of what that might look like? Why that would happen? What we would learn?
I can't say for sure what they're going to call him in for, but it was discussed in some pretrial motions about whether or not the jury is going to hear the reasons and the reasons behind why Chauvin and the other three officers involved were fired so quickly, which was a decision announced by the chief. And so I think it may get into that aspect of did Chauvin follow his police training or not. But I can't say for sure.
Sure. Well, we have a call for you, India. I want to go next to Tomo, where we have Joseph joining us. Good morning, Joseph.
Good morning.
What's your question?
My question is kind of in regards to the police training that will likely be brought up as part of the defense and part of the prosecution, that Derek Chauvin was just acting in regards to what he's been trained to do. And if that is a solid defense, will there be any expectation for reforms in police training going forward?
Great question.
Yeah, well, I think that there have already been some attempts to make changes to the police training in Minneapolis after George Floyd's death, you know, the banning of chokeholds and, you know, some limits on no-knock warrants, I believe. But it came up in opening statements where the prosecution, basically, Attorney Blackwell was saying, when someone is in your custody, they're in your care. And so I think that it's going to be a big point of contention for the prosecution that Chauvin was not following his training and that he should have, you know, provided medical care to George Floyd.
Yes, well, we will continue to follow your coverage in USA Today, India. Best of luck to you as you cover this case and hear this testimony, listening to all the witnesses and following and reporting on it for USA Today. I really want to thank you for being here this morning.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We've been speaking with India Yancey Bragg, a race and diversity reporter with USA Today. She's been covering the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who's been charged with murder and manslaughter in the death of George Floyd. Just ahead is the news. Then we'll dig into the cases of so-called COVID long haulers, those who've had the virus but still have symptoms even months later. I'm Molly Stentz, and this is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.